You're listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, the weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients without becoming overwhelmed by work. Today, I'm talking with Colleen Ceballos, who is a strategic person working on R at Roche. And so this will be pretty cool, because you'll learn a lot about what is currently ongoing in that space and how it will impact our industry. And also, you'll learn a little bit about strategy by the way. So stay tuned for this really, really nice interview with Colleen. I'm producing this podcast in association with PSI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the video on demand content library, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. Head over to psiweb.blog to learn more about PSI activities and become a PSI member today. Welcome to another episode of the Effective Statistician, and today I'm really happy to have Colleen Ceballos from Roche with us, and we will speak about lots of stuff about R, which is, you know, pretty big change in the organization, and with that, there's a lot of other associated changes. So, Colleen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hi, Alex. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, very good. Maybe, you know, introduce yourself to the listener and what you're doing and what your how you came to this position at Roche.
Yeah, sure. So again, thanks for having me on your podcast, and hi everyone listening. So my name is Colleen Ceballos. I'm Swiss and French nationality wise. I'm married and I don't have kids. That's for the little introduction. Professionally, I'm R strategy lead at Roche Informatics, actually since about 3 years, 2.5 years precisely. And I believe we'll talk more about my job and its impact in this interview. But before I, if you allow me to elaborate a bit more on my background, because even though you probably saw me regularly, probably in the past 2 years in conferences about, you know, pharma, regulatory submissions in R, validation, health authority, I actually don't have a statistical or biometrics background or education. I actually come from business, strategy, management. Mm-hmm. I did those kind of studies before joining Roche. And I have, in terms of experience, finance, data analysis, data science, and actually also entrepreneurship experiences. And So I worked for GlaxoSmithKline, Zurich Insurance, and then I created my own company before joining Roche. And I'm pretty sure that that's precisely this that Roche was looking for when they hired me, you know, This strange or eclectic, not so typical set of skills and experience. And I can say now with distance that I think I bring something complementary to the very technical and clinical experts that we hire at Roche that are amazing and doing an excellent work. But I actually complement them and I rely on them actually rely on their expertise. And I try to enable them to be better at what they do. So this is in short. And maybe to finish my introduction, and because I believe that to be an accomplished professional, you also need to take time for your, you know, out of work passions. So very quickly, what I like to do outside of work is singing. I do opera singing style.
That's cool.
Conservatories, yeah, for many years. I do some public performances from time to time. I won't share anything right now, but yeah, that's what I like to do. And also I started kite surfing a couple of years ago. So that's another of my hobbies. Yeah.
Very cool. So that's a really, really interesting combination. So let's talk a little bit about your role. When I saw the role as strategy lead, I was really intrigued because on one hand, of course, R in itself is a hot topic, for a couple of years, and it's only have becoming more hot over the last years. You know, the progress is amazing. There's more and more companies that invest in that. If we think about
people coming from university, most of them are well-trained in R. There's a lot of new releases in terms of R packages. Just recently, there was a new release for basically a publishing platform from R Studio. There's a lot of things going on. And also when I think about the wonderful Wednesday webinar series with all the data visualization, nearly all of the submissions are in R. And that just speaks to, you know, the shift that we had over the years, because when I, maybe 5-6 years ago, was everything in R. And so there has been a really, really dramatic shift. So, and the other part of the role that I found really interesting is strategy, because I think strategy in itself is a super interesting topic that I've encountered over the couple of years now. I had earlier, as a podcast guest, I had a person that was writing about strategy, how, you know, a lot of the strategy has developed more in the military space and how we can learn from that for the business area. Link to that earlier, obviously, in the show notes. And I had all sorts of books here. I just blank on the name. But so these two things really intrigue me. So tell me a little bit more about what is R strategy lead.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about it. This is my daily life right now. And it's definitely a new role, I think, at Roche, and I'm sure, you know, in other pharmaceutical companies. I want to emphasize the fact that I'm R strategy lead in informatics, so at Roche Informatics. It's just slightly different than being in the business, what we call it. You know, usually we say informatics versus business. It has two different functions. So I'm in informatics. And on the business side, you have also, you know, you have the R developers, the biostatisticians, the lead study leads. And we also have an R enablement lead, actually, to make sure that developers are trained in R and Git. So that's on the business side. What I do in the informatics side, and I think what was quite a strategic decision and move from Roche 2 years ago and when they hired me, is really that they wanted someone to support the use of open source programming languages and to drive a strategy, have a strategy for supporting the use of open source programming languages in the business. So we have to build a cohesive approach for this, because we can't have, you know, a different, for example, validation approach in each department or for each, if I exaggerate, for each study, you know, that would not be scalable and so on. So I play a role both internally and externally. So internally, what I do, so externally and externally from Roche, right? So internally, I lead and coordinate how informatics supports the use of open source programming languages in business functions, as I said. For example, I bring solutions to questions like, how do we validate R packages for our clinical trial data analysis and submissions in R? Because as you rightly said, you said a shift from SAS to R. I would say we kind of maybe widened the scope of the programming languages we use, because I think SAS will not disappear from the picture. But okay, I think it's also symbolic to say that we are shifting to R, but SAS is still in the picture, just to say. So I answer solutions like that, or also how do we manage the versions and dependencies of R packages? So for example, we implemented the use of a package manager tool to do that. That's a new challenge. Yes, we didn't have that with SAS, right? So also, can we also validate Python packages? Okay, so things like this. I listen, I take those needs and I build teams, I find solutions. Also, something that I did a year and a half ago, I built capabilities internally to validate R packages in an automated way. And so this way we actually removed dependencies with external vendors that were doing this for us. And we brought the capabilities inside Roche. And I think that's really powerful, because there's no reason why we shouldn't be able to validate our code ourselves. Because at the end, validation is about making sure your code is of good quality and that it does what it's supposed to do, right?
Yeah.
So we actually bring this capability and building software of quality inside, which is, I think, super valuable. This implied that I created a team, you know, I give the vision and make sure that the team is delivering a solution that fits our internal needs and satisfies our internal customers. So there's a whole operational side of things that I then also delegate once I build it. That's one thing. I also extend extended the validation process and tools to Python. So we not just did R, we're doing Python as well. And I also, I think this is less tangible, but I also connect the dots between different teams, you know, with similar needs to avoid silos. We need really to make sure we have a cohesive strategy. Also, I need to ensure that my key internal customers, first of all, and second of all, the decision makers in this company, at least in Roche and Pharma, that they adhere to my strategy. Because without the support of other decision makers, I can't make a decision of, you know, implementing a validation solution or investing in R and Python. No. So alignment is super important. So I spend a lot of my time communicating, removing doubts, misunderstandings, listening to new needs, challenges, and so on. So that's internally.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I could go on with the external part.
Exactly. Maybe also internally, something we did is we challenged and disrupted the traditional way of validation that was traditionally done. So we brought innovative ideas and also changed the way we did validation. Externally, I represent the work that we do at conferences, for example, R&D Pharma, but I also did a couple of others. I also voluntarily support and work for the R Consortium that most of you must know as an active member. And I do another series of initiatives to promote the use of R cross industry. And I help new conferences see the light of day by using my network. For example, we're putting right now a series of events around promoting the use of R in the insurance industry, for example, something that hasn't really been tackled. So, and I'm regularly also contacted by similar roles that I have, or actually my business counterparts in different companies. So we also talk about our different challenges and share ideas. So
cool. What I really loved about kind of your description of your role internally is that it really has all these different aspects of strategy. Yeah, kind of first really understanding the problem. Yeah, like you just mentioned with the validation topic. Yeah, it's not just, okay, we have done validation in past this way, so we'll do it the same way as now. No, understanding, okay, what is really validation? What is optimally required? And by having a different platform, or maybe just, you know, 20 years or 30 years of experience with these kind of things, is there something we can do differently? So first, really understanding the problem, and then kind of understanding also relationships, what is kind of the bigger picture of the problems, or see kind of what will happen, takes all these kind of things into account, and then but not stop there, but also develop a tactical plan how to move it forward. Yeah.
Challenging the status quo as well, I would add.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. That is
you
exactly.
Need a mindset. You need people also internally that have this mindset. Not everybody has it. So sometimes it's more of a challenge than with other people, but it's we can make it. Yeah. It's
how often do you run into the sentence like, we've always done it that way?
Yeah. a lot. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. I can completely see that. So can you give an example for where you used it? Okay, we completely changed the status quo.
So if example with the validation, because we had a way of validating software inside Roche. We had, you know, the CSV validation way of doing, which was super, you know, clearly defined with, and we were using a certain set of tools to validate. And we, you know, and it was super squared, and there was not a lot of innovation and possibility to, and nobody actually, I think, ever questioned the way we were doing validation, because, you know, validation is seen as this thing we have to do on top, and we kind of, you know, we just do it, or we delegate to a team of validation lead, and we just, you know, the people, the experts, don't really care about validation. It's actually really annoying. We spoke with a lot of validation leads. We explained our perspective that we need to integrate validation into the development process of an R package in this case. Right? Because the R language allows you to to have embedded in the code your requirements, your tests, everything, all the information about the package is in the code. So you don't have to, you know, have your requirements in Jira, for example, and extract those and then pull them into another. No, everything is in the code.
Yeah.
You just you simply, in between quotes, simply need to extract that, make sure that you have a test for each requirement without going into too much details. And then you produce the documentation that talks about what your package does and how we make sure that it does what it's supposed to do. All of this can be automated and is automated today, but we had to speak to a lot of people for that to happen.
That, I really love this example, because it's, as you said, you know, every company has their procedures and it's always been done that way, and you know, to do this double programming, whatsoever. Yeah. And thinking, we can meet the same goal, the same underlying goal in different steps, and understanding what do we really do by these processes? What problem do we really solve? I think that is really part of strategy, kind of thinking things completely new.
Yeah. And also because, allow me to add that if you create code of good quality, if you're writing, you're a developer and you're writing your package and you adopt best practices for code development, like, you know, you add your requirements, your tests, you develop a good syntax and so on, then validation is easy because you have everything you need in your package. And actually, so, you know, by creating this tool and by automating validation, we actually embedded validation into development, but also we naturally increase the quality of our code very naturally as well. So it's a win-win.
Yeah, and that also means that shifting from SaaS to R is not just replicating what you have done with the same processes and everything, just with a different language. It's a mindset shift. Yeah, there's a lot of new opportunities. We've talked in the data visualization thing quite a lot about, you know, that you shouldn't do the same thing. So it couldn't be just about, formerly we produced TFLs with SaaS, now we produce TFLs with R. No, yeah, that's not how it's supposed to be. It's about, TFLs were just one way to display and, you know, insight, number. But just one way, yeah? And in many ways, not an optimal way. It's just, you know, because we have been doing this for 20 years and, you know, we are used to sending big files and trucks with files to the FDA. And now we do that and upload that data. But in the end, it's still pretty much the same. But for all of our internal processes, for all of these other things, well, we are not bound to, you know, have A4 sized tables. So there's lots of other opportunities. That's so cool. Yeah, I love the validation example because it shows so clearly that it's not just switching software. It's having very, very different mindset about it.
Yeah, no, exactly. And again, I want to say that we're not really... So I want to say, I think it's important for, you know, I'm representing what we do at Roche here. It's true that we are shifting to the use of open source programming languages, but we're not just erasing SAS from the picture. Actually, what we want to do, and I think because we think, well, obviously we think it's the right thing, is we want to be able to say to our developers or our biostatisticians, use the language of your choice, depending on the situation, depending on the type of analysis you need to do, or, you know, machine learning, or whatever you need to do, depending also on your competencies and your capabilities. So we want to give them this option. And that's something that we're working on.
Yeah, that's the other thing, kind of the people side of it. Yeah, you can't just kind of switch from one day or one year to another, kind of all those things, because you need to take the people with you. Absolutely. Speaking now about what has happened, let's switch a little bit and speak about what might happen in the future, because that is one of the biggest interesting things. Yeah. So if you just kind of extrapolate from what you have seen, been doing in the last couple of years, What do you think will be possible in the future, what that is not possible now?
I think we're doing all of this to be more efficient in the clinical trial process, mm-hmm. the different phases, right? We're not just changing language or changing our ways of working just to change, right? So it's mm-hmm. at the end to be more efficient and to deliver drugs more efficiently and so on. So from collecting the data to cleaning it, to transforming it into the CDIS formats, SDTM, ADAM, to performing statistical analysis and then to submitting outputs, we are, you know, adopting this open source mindsets so that we can do this more efficiently. For example, we are able to replace the many thousands of TLGs, you know, the tables, mm-hmm. listings, and graphs, those outputs that are created by our biostatisticians and data analysts team. We can actually view them, use app-based yep. Views of our data, right? Which is much more efficient.
Yep.
This shift opens a lot of doors in terms of also code reuse. Mm-hmm. If our colleague in Novartis or in Pfizer or in another company has created a package to solve the same problem that we have or to, you know, improve one part of the process, well, we should be able to reuse it mm-hmm. and instead of creating it again, right? So that's a dimension that open source programming language adoption enables, actually. So again, to be more efficient.
But that means also much more transparent, isn't it? Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. So because what's happening now is very often kind of, you know, the code stays within the companies, just maybe share with the FDA, but you don't really see what's going on outside. But when, you know, these kind of things are more public, you can see exactly, okay, for example, for imputing missing values or, you know, calculating certain things that are a little bit more complex, you can directly see, okay, this is exactly how they did it. So let's do it exactly the same way so that it's really consistent. Yeah, so that the apple from Roche is the same apple from Pfizer, it's the same apple from GSK.
So I think you don't have to do exactly the same. And I think no company will satisfy itself with doing exactly what its neighbor is doing, right? You, in those big actors in the pharma industry, you always want to add your piece of salt.
Yeah, but for example, if it's about defining a certain endpoint. So if you think like, well, treatment response, how do you define it? Here, here, here. You want to have comparable data across different studies. Yeah. And so then, of course, these kind of things make a lot of change. Of course, kind of in terms of, you know, certain things will always be different. Well, one study will say, oh, we want to use this primary endpoint or a different primary endpoint or later or earlier or different study population, all these kind of different things. Yeah. You'll always optimize for your compound and for the success of your compound. But there's certain kind of, you know, understanding, okay, how did I do that? This will be, I guess, more transparent in the future.
Yeah. And I think it fosters innovation, don't you think?
Yes. Yes. The funny thing is standardization enables innovation, doesn't hinder it. Because then you could do the things that you don't want to kind of innovate on faster, so you have more time to think about the other things. Yeah. And spend time to with doing another demographic table that you have done for 20 years or things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
What else do you think will be possible in the future?
I think I said already a number of things. So overall, so without going into the, I won't talk about the, so I'm not myself a SAS programmer or I'm, you know, so I won't do comparison, like function by function comparison. But at my level, at the strategic level, what I also see is that by opening up to open source programming languages and by, you know, enabling you to do submissions in SAS and R and Python in whichever language you want, I think we can also, you know, that's better for each company because you more likely will put more molecules on the market, right? So it also opens opportunities. Also, a side effect of that is that we work more with health authorities to enable this to happen. So there's more collaboration, communication, whereas maybe in the past there you know, it was just the status quo. We were doing with SaaS. Health authorities were used to receiving SaaS code, and there was no innovation, maybe, really. I exaggerate, of course. But so I think it also, a side effect is that it also allows more communication and innovation on the health authority side. And they also need to train and give, you know, give more capabilities to their workforce.
Yeah. That instead of potentially, as you just said, you know, you have these long list of tables that you want to communicate, and just printing them on paper or on PDF isn't really effective. So if you use internally an app, can you provide that app also to the regulators? Can they maybe, you know, look into lots of different subgroups on their own way? You know, can you, instead of, you know, working on getting all the tables validated, have more time for really good data visualizations, those interactive and explanatory data visualizations. I think there's a lot of opportunity to get away from the, let's say, the boring tasks, yeah, the repetitive tasks, and free up time for the creative things, the innovative things. That would be really, really cool. There's one other thing that I think it could be very interesting is that the opportunity to connect the results together with their metadata. Yeah. So that you directly see, okay, this number is a mean from this endpoint at this time point in this study and so on. Yeah. And that will then later enable that you can use it beyond the regulatory submission, beyond the CSR, yeah, that you can use it also for publication, for HDA purposes, for clinical trial support, for all kind of other areas, yeah, so that it's not, okay, the accessibility to the results themselves completely changes, and that because what currently very often happens is you have this PDF output, and then someone says, oh, we need to have a nice graphic from it. This some poor guy reads through all the PDF, types in the number into Excel, creates an Excel graphic, puts it into a PowerPoint, and it often goes to somewhere else. There's another person sees this, says, oh, I would like to, I need the same graphic, but with kind of different colors. But it just has a JPEG. It kind of looks into, oh, this is approximately this number, creates a new Excel spreadsheet, and there's no traceability whatsoever. And I think with this integration, there will potentially the opportunity to be much more both forward and backward traceable. Yeah, so that you have, in terms of forward traceability, I mean, kind of you can see this data was used in all these different areas, as well as if you see an output slide or whatever, you can go back to, oh, that is where it was programmed. And that will help a lot for companies to understand what they actually know. Because I think many companies have so much knowledge that there's nobody that oversees this knowledge. Yeah, but this has been in many, many situations where I also joke with colleagues about kind of, you know what, lots of statisticians do later on in the life cycle? They search for the analysis. Have we done that? Probably we have done that. We must have done that. There's this kind of, you know, number here. So where's the corresponding output? Yeah. And that's so ineffective. Yeah.
Absolutely. It goes hand in hand with the reusability of the data. So findability of the data and traceability and reusability.
Yeah. That's right. Awesome. So that covers really a lot of points that we wanted to talk about. I love kind of the strategic approach there, kind of challenging the status quo, really understanding the problem, up to kind of implementing a solution and moving these things forward. It means that, you know, when we shift from SaaS to R, it's not just, you know, same stuff, different name. And there's a lot of opportunities for us in the future. That's so cool. Yeah. And yeah, as you said, we need to take the people with us to make sure that, yeah, because there surely will be a very, very long transition period.
Yes. And there's a lot of interest already. I can see it, you know, with the audience that come to the events that the R Consortium organizes, that you know, that I also bring together internally and externally. There's a lot of interest. We had about 600 participants live in the last week. We did an R Adoption series event with three FDA speakers, and that was thanks to the work of my colleague Ning Lang from Roche and myself. And it was a huge 600 is a lot of participants for this type of event, so huge interest. People are watching the recording a lot, so you know, I want to address myself to all the people in different companies who work on this topic, who help drive this this strategy, because we need all of you. And we also, you know, I take this very seriously, and I want to build common understanding on what we're doing and bring people together around this this move to open source shift.
Cool. Thanks so much, Colleen. That was an outstanding last statement. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Alex.
Have you already requested access to the libraries that we have with all the free content around the Effective Statistician? If not, head over to theeffectivestatistician.com and look for this free library. There's all kind of different nice things about it. Data visualizations, the webinar recordings, everything that I have for free is in there. This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain and her team at VVS who helped with the show in the background. And thank you for listening. Reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.